Welcome to the Crisman Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Crisman. Topics on today's episode include a new climate disclosure rule. Ooh, exciting. My interview with Experians join me now on misconceptions associated with verification and advances in reporting technology. And it looks like rates will be up some or down some for months to come. Thanks to this week's podcast sponsor, Optimal Blue. Optimal Blue smart solutions automate critical functions like pricing, hedging, trading, and social media. Actionable data provides timely insights to bolster operational and competitive strategies. Together with real-time industry connections to 70-plus technology vendors, their marketplace platform enables you to compete more effectively and elevate results. More originators and investors rely upon Optimal Blue's integrated solutions, data, and connections to support their unique business strategies, no matter how complex. Congratulations to the Kardashians on their 20th season. And to me for never having watched a single minute of a single episode. There are certainly more important things in life, like the rising cost of homeowners insurance and the changing climate. Man-made or natural, it doesn't really matter. If an investor worsens your price or flat out refuses to buy a loan on a property prone to disasters, regardless of root cause, you and your borrower are impacted. The SEC will stay the implementation of its new climate disclosure rule as the agency pushes to consolidate the legal challenges that have already been filed attempting to overturn it. While lawsuits from more than 20 Republican-led states and various business groups argue that the disclosure requirements are beyond the SEC's legal authority, the regulator still believes the rule is within its power to order. The SEC recently weakened the rule, including requirements for some companies to report Scope 3 emissions from their supply chains and customers using their products. For today's interview, I wanted to welcome back to the show Experians Joy Mina to talk about misconceptions associated with verification and advances in reporting technology. She spent her career in software development, product management, and commercialization, and she joined Experians Verifications Project when it was just an idea and has grown with the business. She's now part of the leadership team.
Robbie, what's your favorite thing about hosting this podcast?
The variety of folks I get to speak with. If you think about the mortgage industry, it's incredible, all the different roles and types of companies and different people that exist in the ecosystem. So, you know, I'm talking to you traditionally, it's a credit bureau, there's appraisal companies, there's lenders, there's investors, there's capital markets folks, there's processors, there's underwriters, there's executive, like I get to speak with a huge variety of people. And I think that a lot of the times we can get kind of like, at least when I worked in the industry in capital markets, we get kind of siloed into our roles and we don't think about the other parts of the process. And so this has been a great step back to be able to get a sense of all the different players. That's one. But then two, and maybe this isn't as great as I thought it was, I pick up on speaking patterns now. And so it's helped me with my own speech. I used to use more filler words. I still use a bit, but listening to myself every day has certainly helped with being aware of how I speak. So that's been good. Although I was going to say the downside to that is like, if someone has a certain speech tick, then I pick up on it very quickly, even in everyday life.
Oh, no.
But thank you for asking that question. That was cool.
I actually love those two. The first one, I completely agree with you. I feel like specifically in mortgage, it's always so varied, and I always enjoy speaking to the different stakeholders, and I feel like every time is an opportunity to learn something, and I honestly hadn't thought, Robbie, that you have to sit there and listen to yourself play it back every day. I hadn't really considered that, so kudos to you, because most of us hate it.
Yeah. So you, and I'll flip this around and ask you, how did you get to where you are today in the industry? Did you go straight to Experian out of UC Irvine, or have you had a circuitous path throughout mortgage?
I have had I'd say, an interesting path, and definitely not in mortgage. So I joined Experian after getting my MBA. And at the time, I'd had, you know, most of my job experience was, if not most, actually all of my job experience was not in finance. At no point did I ever expect to work for a credit bureau or think that I'd be working in or around the mortgage industry. My background is all in software development and product engineering. And, you know, I was a developer, and I pursued an MBA because I really fell in love with how interesting it was once you kind of blend technology and business, and how if you leverage them together, you can really make something magical. And it just so happened that I learned about Experian while getting my MBA. It was not, certainly not my plan. And I think had you asked me 10 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I would have looked at you like, what, credit bureau? And it's been a wonderful surprise. And that's life, though. Things you don't anticipate end up being the most wonderful things. So I've been at Experian now for about 5 years, and I couldn't be more grateful for the opportunities it's presented me. And I think the fact that I don't come from this industry allows me to look at it from a different perspective. So my role now is product commercialization. And, you know, I think that's a lot of words just to say I get the pleasure of building new products to launch in our verifications business. And I constantly am learning from people. And I think that's okay. And I think it's okay to say, hey, you know, I'm not the industry expert. We have plenty of those on the team, but I love bringing, you know, that outside perspective, or coming at it from a slightly different and innovative way, or how can we approach the same problem differently? But no, absolutely not, Robbie, never intended it. But I could say that probably about most of my life.
Yeah, there you go. And I should say, genuinely, not in a sales pitch sense here, I really enjoyed my first interview with you because people think of Experian as a credit bureau, but it does so much more. And so it was cool for you to kind of open my eyes in that first interview to some of the other things that Experian does. And so let's kind of pick up from where we left off. Let's address common misconceptions associated with verification so our listeners can sidestep potential hurdles and enhance their verification process. Give us some common misconceptions.
Oh, okay. I do enjoy the question like this. So I do frequently encounter lenders who have misconceptions around digital verifications. And this is just a great opportunity to share, you know, what we've learned over the years. I'd like to start with the misconception that a lender needs to put the provider with the most records first in their waterfall. While that might feel like a surefire way to cut costs, it isn't necessarily the most effective. Instead of comparing records, I would really encourage lenders to focus on a provider's total cost to verify a consumer. And that could be everything from cost from pre-qual to close. And by optimizing for that total cost, a lender can absolutely save more money by putting a provider with fewer records first in their waterfall. And that might sound a little bit counterintuitive, but it really does come down to breaking down those total costs through all the stages of a loan. You know, what's the cost of pre-qual? What's the cost of underwriting and re-verification? And once you add all those costs up, you will see, I think, a lot more variation than expected across providers because they price reports differently. So, for example, I've seen some providers price their reports per employment, while others price per active or inactive records. And comparing like just the flat report price from provider to provider can be a little bit of an apples to oranges comparison when how they're priced is so different. So at Experian, we price our reports at one flat rate per consumer, and that's regardless of how many employment records are on the report. And ultimately, while having multiple instant providers in the same waterfall may result in redundant coverage, it's really once you do that math, putting a provider like Experian first does and can provide an overall cost savings that would allow a lender to ultimately come out ahead. And that's why we see so many of our lenders doing just that, and why I always encourage lenders not to just take a number at face value, but to dig in and say, okay, well, what does this mean for me? What is the cost for me? What is really the math once you do it?
That's great to hear, because credit costs have been a huge topic in the industry as of late. I think MBA's latest numbers have companies losing a couple thousand dollars for each loan they originate. So any way that companies can manage costs, I think they should all be for. It's top of mind for all these lenders. Let's go back to your comment regarding record count or network size. Can you unpack that a little more?
Oh, absolutely. I'd say, as with many things in life, it comes down to quality, not quantity. You see providers will tout different record counts, and honestly, it can be confusing. You'll see some providers publishing figures like total records or active records or historical records. And to make it even more confusing, some providers include non-payroll records in the figures they publish. And that could be records like student history records or insurance records or criminal screening records. And that just results in a lot of noise that a lender then has to sift through to ultimately find something of value to them. And I would encourage lenders to focus on hit rate rather than pure coverage numbers as the leading indicator of success. Having data or having access to data just for the sake of data doesn't help a lender reduce their cost or underwrite more loans. But being able to have a higher hit rate with a verifications provider, absolutely will. At Experian, we like to partner with each lender to determine what success means for them and make sure they're not paying for data that they don't need. Like we talked about on our last conversation, we really do believe that lenders deserve more choices. And I think part of that is having a say in what the success looks like and how they move forward with a provider.
Well, also during our previous conversation, you mentioned consumer permission verification plays a critical role. And I'd love to get your thoughts on this level, or I'd love to get your thoughts on the level of friction that this method actually creates in the user experience. Can you give us a little more insight there?
Sure. I say, to be very honest, consumer permission solutions do add friction. I'm not going to come here and tell you they don't. They absolutely do. And that's why we always recommend leading with an instant solution. However, how much friction is introduced can be greatly mitigated with the right partner. And I think ultimately the misconception here is I often hear lenders thinking all consumer permission solutions are the same or introduce the same level of friction, but that's not necessarily the case. Going back to the theme of giving lenders more choices, lenders should be able to tailor how they introduce permission solutions to their consumers. And while most permission solutions do take minutes to complete, and they're similar in that regard, there are many decisions that a lender has to make on how to present the product to the consumer and how best to mitigate that friction. So a consumer-facing widget experience can be integrated into a lender's user experience. It can be integrated into a third-party user experience. It can be presented to the consumer via a link in an email or through an SMS text. And having a verification provider who understands the nuances of mortgage will be able to give that lender a recommendation on how best to introduce permission solutions in a way that ultimately mitigate how much friction is introduced in their process. And when I say, having a partner who understands the nuances of mortgage, I mean things like what platforms are used by lenders, or how many CRAs are involved in a given transaction, or the different needs of the consumer, not only on the front end, but also on the back end, having things like supporting consumer disputes. Understanding all of that will really inform what's best for that lender. And I'd also want to call out, You want a partner that helps you mitigate friction for your loan officers. While consumer permission solutions need to be seamless for the consumer, I think they also need to be seamless for loan officers and easy to use and simple and intuitive. So while there's a lot of benefit to consumer permission solutions, I'd say primarily having increased coverage at a lower cost, I would really encourage lenders to evaluate all sources of friction when determining what partner and what consumer permission solution is best for them.
And finally, before I let you go today, Joy, can we talk about this greater coverage at a more affordable price? It sounds like a win-win to me. I think I can agree the experience is relatively seamless. So I want to close by asking, where does this data come from? And are you sourcing data exclusively from payroll providers?
Oh, okay. I always love this question. That is a great one. The short answer is no. While payroll providers play a critical role in the verification ecosystem, Experian sources a sizable portion of our data directly from employers. As you might be aware, when we launched Experian Verify a few years ago, we also launched another business, Experian Employer Services. And Experian's Employer Services business has direct relationships with employers, typically with their HR departments or payroll departments, since Employer Services outsources many tedious HR functions. Their relationship with the employer is one where they allow the employer to do what they do best, which is investing in their employees. And Experian Employer Services takes on some of those HR functions. One of those functions that is offered to employers is verifications for fulfillment, which allows Experian to then offer that employer's data exclusively through Experian Verify, the instant solution. So while that's exciting, I really hope you don't assume that this means Experian maintains an archive of records or a database of records. For every single Experian Verify transaction, we go directly to employers for the most recent and up-to-date employment information in real time. And there's no better way to source payroll data securely and directly than from that source. Employment records coming from employers are also exclusive. So lenders can't get those records anywhere else since the employer has a direct relationship with Experian. I think that's something lenders should always consider, that leveraging a provider who maintains direct relationships with employers is critical because those are direct relationships and they have a lot more stickiness. Well, anyway, Robbie, if I feel like I talked a bit, that's all I have to say other than, you know, it wouldn't be a conversation with me if I didn't tell you verifications is life. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I do sincerely mean it when I tell you I've enjoyed every conversation we have, and it is always a pleasure to connect with you.
The feeling is mutual. I think we have one more of these scheduled, so I very much look forward to that. Yes. And I do like the catchiness of the hashtag verifications is life. You sound like a hip Gen Z when you say that.
Joy, we're not that hip. But we love it.
Speak for yourself. I'm pretty cool. But yeah, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you, Robbie. Thanks for having me on.
Sticky inflation, diminishing rate cut expectations, no significant escalation in hostilities between Iran and Israel. Glad you're all caught up from the past week. We begin the day with agency MBS price. No, I'm just kidding. We did learn yesterday that retail sales for March beat expectations and included an upward revision to February's growth, yet another sign of the enduring strength of the U.S. consumer, and yet another reason bond yields hit new year-to-date highs. The New York Fed's Empire State Manufacturing Survey for April contracted more than expected, and the NAHB Housing Market Index was unchanged from March. Yes, the Fed is still expected to start cutting rates this year, but robust consumption and investment, as well as easing supply chain problems, have allowed for continuing strong economic growth in the face of higher interest rates. Concerns over war, geopolitical tensions, and persistent inflationary pressures aren't yet enough to overshadow the fact that many economic indicators remain positive. That sentiment was on full display yesterday, as cautious optimism returned to markets, despite the Iranian attacks on Israel over the weekend. Markets have already scaled back bets on policy easing, as recent Fed speak has revealed no urgency to cut interest rates in the near term. And keep in mind that last week closed with year-ahead inflation expectations and long-term inflation expectations both increasing. Both are figures to which the Fed pays close attention. This week's economic calendar will be dominated by housing data. We received the aforementioned NAHB Housing Market Index yesterday. Housing starts and building permits were released a matter of minutes ago, respectively down 14.7% to a 1.321 million unit annual pace, and down 4.3% to a 1.458 million unit annual pace, respectively. Existing home sales are due out on Thursday. Housing starts and building permits were both expected to have edged lower in March after mild weather fueled increases in February. Later today brings Redbook same-store sales for the week ending April 13th, industrial production and capacity utilization, treasury auctions, and remarks from several Fed speakers. Okay, it's time. We begin the day with agency MBS prices roughly unchanged from Monday evening, the 10-year yielding 4.65 after closing yesterday at 4.63%, and the 2-year at 4.94%. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. 90% of bald people still own a comb. They just can't part with it. Okay, one more hair joke. What do you call a row of rabbits hopping backward? A receding hairline.
Thanks again to this week's podcast sponsor, Optimal Blue. Optimal Blue's smart solutions automate critical functions like pricing, hedging, trading, and social media. Actionable data provides timely insights to bolster operational and competitive strategies. Together with real-time industry connections to 70-plus technology vendors, their marketplace platform enables you to compete more effectively and elevate results. More originators and investors rely on Optimal Blue's integrated solutions, data, and connections to support the unique business strategies, no matter how complex.
If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.